I wonder how many realize that the progress of industry during the past 45 years is due to the inventions of Tesla. It may be rather difficult to convince the average person, but the proof of this amazing statement can be seen all around us. A glance through the patent records, and a study of Tesla's articles proves him the inventor of many things that others are given the credit for. There are many men who have tried to take away the credit for the radio invention, but from records to be found in his many lectures and patents, it is proved without a doubt that he is the inventor. Many well-known engineers have, in the years since 1896, made various forms of wireless machines, one and all using the basic principles invented by Tesla. They all use his oscillator, transformer in one form or another, and have designed new parts all using the same basic idea. The perfect radio has yet to be made, and when it is, it will be a Tesla machine. The so-called modern radio is not near perfect. In the future Tesla radio, all the power is sent from the transmitter. Tesla started his investigation of high frequency in 1889. He gave a demonstration of transmission of this current without wires through the earth in 1891, 1892. He gave an outline of this work before the Franklin Institute and National Electric Light Association in 1893. He explained the plan to Professor Helmholtz with experiments. He stated it was practicable, and he perfected his system in 1896. In the summer of 1897, Lord Kelvin, whom my father worked for in England, honored him with a visit in New York. He was carried away with the idea, but at first condemned it because he thought it was Hertz waves, but approved when he was shown that it was true conduction, and was transformed into the warmest of supporters. The basic idea of the Tesla system, used in every radio, is the oscillation transformer, consisting of capacity and inductance which may be connected and interconnected in two, three, or more circuits. Many interesting facts can be obtained from Tesla's patents, which anyone can obtain from the US Patent Office. In those patents can be found the formula to end wars, and to send power to any part of the world, and even to other planets, without wires. I believe that it was his idea when he obtained the patent of 1896, to send the power in electrical energy from Niagara, to any part of the globe, without loss. This power in a slightly different manner is used to energize the war defensive barrier. In this machine the energy is concentrated and built up to an enormous amount. It then projects electrical controlled particles, enabling the conveyance to a great distance of thousands of horsepower, which nothing can resist. Others have devoted considerable time seeking a practical apparatus similar to that of Tesla. It is not surprising that they have not found it, because the majority of professional scientists are tied down by hard and fast rules of out-of-date theories, so that it is only on rare occasions, more often by pure chance, that a new principle is discovered. Tesla, on the other hand, made his own theories and proved them by practical demonstration. There had always been a strange antagonism towards Tesla, chiefly because he was so glaringly straightforward and honest. He made fools of experts who said it can't be done by doing the impossible. Tesla gave the credit for his ability to discover astonishing new principles to his maker, who gives this rare knowledge to chosen individuals, who are thus ordained by him to help mankind overcome some of their difficulties. Chapter 13, Tesla's invention for defense by electrical energy. We know what the scientific world thought about Nikola Tesla's statement, which he made in 1934, that he had discovered a new principle which made it possible to transmit an electrical force, in a beam, not a death ray, of infinitesimally small cross-section, something close to 1/1,000,000th of a square centimeter. Because of its attitude towards anything new from Tesla, the scientific world lost, for a time at least, the secret of this new principle. One of the keys to it is in Tesla's statement: there is no energy in matter other than that received from the environment. As I am writing this for the benefit of the man on the street, it would be well to state that electricity is the old-fashioned name for the thing which makes your radio, TV, etc. work, and lights up the world, and this new Tesla discovery is just another electrical machine. During his lifetime, Tesla had discovered, invented, and built many wonderful machines, among which are the radio, radar, TV and many others which I have already told you about. In a letter which I received from Tesla in 1932, he said that he had made an extraordinary new discovery, the key to which can be found in the Bible, Revelations, making it possible to send an electric current of very small cross-section, through the earth, above the earth, and under the sea, also to flash considerable amounts of energy through interstellar space to any distance without the slightest dispersion. This narrow beam is the secret of perfect TV. Of the future, also of radar, and long-distance telephones. By its use we can do away with the aerials, poles, towers and microwave reflectors, etc. Also by its means we can communicate with the planets, and, very important, provide power to operate a spaceship, which is a big step from the rockets which blast one's head off. It eliminates the need to carry fuel, leaving more space for the payload. What is the secret of this discovery? How does it work? In the Dew Line, for instance, we have a line of stations, each one of which could be blasted off the Earth. In the Tesla system, there are no visible material stations, poles, relays, etc. Instead, we peak the beam, in standing waves, at predetermined intervals. The peaks rise above the Earth, or over the Earth, at right angles to the feed wave, or beam. The peak can go up any distance, which is the radius of the Earth. From the transmitter to each peak, the beam wags back and forth, or revolves around the Earth at a predetermined speed of from 1 to 24,000 times per second. In doing this, it sets up secondary, or induced, currents. Any object coming within a peak, or beam, will cause said beam to indicate the fact, which is felt at the transmitter station. The position of the object is thus seen, and can, if necessary, be destroyed, by means of the same peak or others. Tesla's machine, therefore, sets up millions of invisible towers all over the world, under and above the land and sea, so nothing can pass or exist without detection, and by its peculiar action, a warhead can be destroyed before it has time to leave home. This machine is therefore the answer to the murder rockets. How does it work and who will be the first to build it? The Soviets, or anyone who can use their heads and read, might know how it works because the secret of its operation can be found in Tesla's lectures. The scientific world ignored Tesla, and certainly, the Western world ridiculed his most important ideas. Tesla once said, "The walls of Jericho were made to fall through vibrating energy, directed against them by men who in tune with God, were skillful in the use of intensely simple machinery, but wonderfully effective." And I believe most firmly that when we come to know a little more than we yet know of how to manipulate the force of sound, we shall literally remove mountains through an application of the law of vibration. I do not regard the Bible narratives as myths, they are to me a scientific revelation, dim in places, I grant, but nevertheless, storehouse is abundantly filled with the vast knowledge accumulated by the godly and truly learned in ancient times. In the future, men and women who are truly in tune with God will continue to discover wonderful new inventions in the Bible put there by divine will for the good of mankind. Chapter 14, copy of my notice published in Quebec City newspaper, January 2, 1939, concerning the strange aircraft which appeared at Lakeport, Quebec, Canada, at 2 o'clock in the morning of Tuesday, December 27, 1937. The drawings shown are made from marks left on the snow, by a very large object, which for the want of a better word, I name an aircraft. Because of the all too brief a glimpse, which I had of the strange craft, and almost total darkness, my description is mostly surmise. But the size of the machine is based on actual measurements taken immediately after its departure. It is possible the machine is an experimental blimp, or air ship. That is in fact one reasonable explanation, which, however, does not explain its speed, lack of noise, or the mysterious power which can make people unconscious at a distance. Another explanation of the craft, which is not so feasible, is that it comes from outer space, Perhaps the planet Mars, or Venus, certainly its mode of propulsion must be new, otherwise the craft would have been detected by the sound of the usual motors or jets as used on our air craft. The only reason, which made me aware of it, is the fact that I have erected on my property, a Tesla intruder alarm. This instrument, which I have built from information outlined by Dr. Tesla, detects the intrusion of any object which comes within its working radius, which is adjustable to close range, or a great distance. My present testing apparatus consists of a 75-foot pail, on which is fastened a metal plate, the surface of which is sensitized, and by means of an amplifier and conductors, any heat impulse of an object within its range is recorded in my laboratory, where it is again amplified and relayed to the alarm system. The most important feature of the system is, however, an ultra-high frequency wave detector, also a Tesla invention, which is maintained in a poise in relation to normal surroundings, this also by means of a system of relays and amplifiers, sounds and records an alarm if anything comes within its range. Therefore, in the early hours of last Tuesday morning, my alarm sounded, and under normal conditions I would have awakened, but I was in profound sleep, induced by overwork, and I became aware of some disturbance only by degrees, and when I actually woke the alarm was not sounding, but heard the strange sound which I thought came from the radio, but after a careful inspection of my alarm system, I found it had been in operation between 2 and 2:30, and the reason I did not hear the alarm was an important part was fused, as if by a powerful current, evidence of some strange force on the mystery craft. This could be a new development of a foreign country or something from outer space. If this can be used beyond the range of our weapons, it would place us at the mercy of any country who had it. A small force in a space flyer would make armed resistance futile. Perhaps the oldest known records of spaceships is found in the Hindu classics, Ramayana and Mahabharata of ancient India, while the annals of Thutmose III of ancient Egypt, 15U4, 1450 BC, which are in the Vatican, give many stories of fire circles. There is also a spaceship mentioned in Henry V, Part 3, Act 2. Scene L, by Shakespeare, and if one has the time to look through many other old dusty books, no doubt many other stories will be found. The Bible is full of such accounts. It is well worth one's time to search through the Bible books. I will list a few which I found very interesting. You might have to study the stories before you can get the correct picture. Not is it an interesting game, but it will give one a new, and perhaps a better, understanding of scripture. I hope so at any rate. So good hunting to you all. End of part 2. Part 3, some remarks from the book Return of the Dove by Margaret Storm and Arthur Matthews. God said, let there be light, so he made Tesla, and there was light. Chapter 1. Today there are many spaceships, flying about everywhere, their brilliant colors flashing like a peacock's tail. Many of them come to us over great cosmic light ways, winging their way even without wings, traveling about God's great playground, propelled by the sustaining breath of His love for His children, even the foolish ones who now need be foolish no longer, for that is what makes it a time here on the planet Earth. We need be foolish no longer. Now we can awaken, stretch our minds and hearts up, 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 until we hit a star. We have been prodigals for the last millions of years and the diet of husks has been awful. But, the bad dream is over. We can relax and prepare for the feast, a grand and wonderful festival of human victory, which will last for 2,000 years. By that time we will have long since forgotten about the husks and the past years of planetary isolation, and we will be out there riding the lightways in space, ships, hopping from star to star on our cosmic assignment, while the great symphony of the spheres plays on and the angels sing. Of course, we still have with us in these latter days, the diehards, the spoil sports, the screwballs, the oddballs, the sad sacks, and a whole assortment of wet blankets in a wide variety of sizes, shapes, and shades. They are the ones with the souped-up egos. They do not, by the idea of spaceships, music of the spheres or the singing angels. They are the foolish ones who want to continue their foolishness. In the hospital world that we have known for millions of years during our cosmic quarantine, it is correct to say that most of us have been foolish in the majority of our embodiments. We have been dreadful phonies, strictly hams, acting out roles on a stage called the world, a stage like a mixed, up, upside, down cake, with an animated crazy quilt for a platter, with such a design for living. It is a matter of no wonderment that whoever is in charge had to send flying saucers to rescue us, warn, cajole or to just haul some of us off to a new dumping ground, to a new sort of hospital planet devoted exclusively to drying out wet blankets and removing the sadness from sacks, and that, if you please, just at the moment when the chemise became high fashion. But those of us who are left here on the planet Earth, who will continue our living here after the saucers have flown the cracked cups away to an Eurepair shop, well, we will have a whale of a clean, up job ahead of us because this globe has been lacking in good housekeeping for a long, long time. We will have to step out and keep up with the Joneses, only this time they don't live down the street, they live up there on those gay sparkling spheres called Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and so forth. And in places which sound like a melody, Aquaria, Clarion, and a tiny little lighted jewel of a planet called Excelsior, which is said to be a delightful little place inhabited by little people, but real little people, very beautiful little men and women of exquisite stature, towering 2 or perhaps even 3 inches in height. They have perfect forms which move and float in rhythmic dances of breathtaking beauty and grace. They have never known distress of any kind. They are God's dedicated children. Their fire dances in honor of the sacred flame, are 11 expressions of them giving to their creator for his gift of life. That is their way of praying. Lancing is to them synonymous with living, or the expressing of gratitude for the limitless cosmic abundance. They are extremely artistic, and when they are not dancing, they are constantly helping the little nature spirits, the fairies, the elves, the water sprites, to rearrange the decorations on the surface of their planet. Perhaps a miniature rose tree just there, and a tiny waterfall plunging dizzily down from a sheer drop of 6 feet, would be effective as a backdrop for a new dance. Are ideas such as these pondered by the little men and women who live on Excelsior? The heavy foot of an earthling may never tread on Excelsior soil, but it is said that spaceships are equipped with marvelous viewing devices which will bring a planetary surface into a clear focus such as would make all Hollywood's cameras and screens seem like instruments as primitive as a stone arrowhead. Truly, the cosmos is a place fascinating beyond the imagination of men, and best of all, it is man's heritage. That is where we belong, out there in the playground of the gods, far beyond the silly Sputniks, the false moons, the grapefruit-sized satellites, even beyond the moon itself, and beyond the neighboring planets and stars and into the great golden pathway of the Milky Way. We belong far beyond all the rubbish and rubble of this once magnificent planet, which we ourselves have turned into a hell. The universe is our heritage and we have but to claim it, to explore it, to revel in its fathomless beauty. It is all ours to use, to improve, and to love. That is the clue. It is ours to love. But, we have forgotten how to love natural things, God-created things. We love only our own grotesque miscreations, our mighty death-dealing weapons, our sculptured monuments marking blood-stained battlefields, our martial music designed to stir the hearts of men as they march forth to kill and to be killed, our guided missiles conceived by unguarded men, left helpless and bereft without knowledge of their sources, our ungreat bombs that can pulverize a great city at one blow. We love to visit our spacious cemeteries, crowded to overflowing with the silent dead. We love to deck the graves with ugly arrangements of withering flowers, piling death upon death. We are sorry we could not give our beloved a more handsome tombstone. But taxes ride beside death on this planet. You know how it is. There was the hospital bill, the doctor's bill, the X-ray bill, the bill at the corner drugstore, plus a whopping big bill from the surgeon who cut and carved and sliced and sawed with all his might and main, while Death just stood there and waited patiently. It was by no whim of chance that our cosmic hierarchy designated the Earth as Planet D in this solar system. That letter has come to stand for death, destruction, devastation, desperation, deficits, depletion, depression, devils, and the D line. It also stands for dainty dancers who have never known distress, but that is on the planet Excelsior, somewhere out there in space. Somewhere out there where the wind is singing, where the air is fresh and sweet as white daisies laughing in the sun, the little planet spins on its course. A tiny crystal globe is alight with the sacred flame, and around it, the little men and women circle in their rhythmic dance, their hearts aflame with love of the One. The little waterfall splashes merrily, a brilliant butterfly flits about the miniature rose tree and finds a resting place. The stillness vibrates with rapture. The dance goes on Excelsior, and here on Earth. Death still rides in the saddle, but not for long. A story, the origins of man. Now in this glad November we can live with joy again. Now is the moment of appraisal. Now is the time to catch, to hold, to examine a fleeting cosmic instant covering 19 million years in the cycle of human history on this planet Earth. For now in these early November days of 1957, we know that the long and terrible chapter of human struggle has been finished. That is, it is finished for those who want it that way. For the others, the die-hard skeptics, the sinister secretives, the know-it-alls, the so-waiters, for all these and others of their tribe, special provisions will be made, but elsewhere, somewhere, not here, not on this planet. For this planet has really, had it, and far, far beyond the call of duty. That call first came sounding through the entire galaxy 19 million years ago. The universe had assembled a large number of refugees from other planets. These were the laggards, the leftovers, the rejected ones from those planets and stars in this and other solar systems. Using their free will in a destructive manner, they had made orphans of themselves by refusing the guidance of their own higher natures, their own divine guided selves, and preferred to dally away their time in experimenting with miscreations of their own rather than in learning to create according to the divine plan. They contributed nothing constructive to the whole of which they were an integral part. They had skipped so many classes in learning that they could not help to catch up. Their miscreations proved so imperfect and destructive that they were finally refused further opportunities to incarnate within their own groups. So, the Earth people came forward and offered to help the laggards by receiving them into families here. No other planet had a classroom for these problem students, or at least no other planet was willing to tackle the job of trying to redeem them. But the Earth was a young planet, vigorous and strong, magnificently beautiful, abundant and full of promise. Disease was unknown. There was no distress in the sense of strain or pain. Members of the first route race were brought to the Earth in a natural spaceship, a thought-controlled globe. They were accompanied by their teachers, sages and hierarchs representing the great cosmic ray. This first group settled down in what is now familiarly known as the Grand Teton area in Wyoming. That country is still beautiful today. But in those days, the entire globe was a sphere of unrivaled beauty. It is said that Amaryllis, the goddess of spring, so loved the Earth that she spent 900 years supervising its decoration, preparing it for the first guests. Over the entire globe the climate was always pleasant, neither too warm nor too cold, a land of eternal spring. There were no storms, floods, hurricanes, blizzards, or natural catastrophes because there was no discord among the people. Human beings definitely make their own troubles by their refusal to live as God intended them to live. Moreover, the clear and beautiful lower atmosphere around the Earth became steadily more and more radiant as the hierarchies and sages instructed the people how to draw forth the goodness of the cosmic rays, to be used for any practical purpose that might arise. The Earth people, living in this radiant atmosphere, were constantly bathed in these glorious emanations which flooded the Earth from outer space, and then ascended back to the source, for it is in the nature of the flame, even physical fire, to rise. As a result, the people felt buoyant, energized and spiritually attuned at all times. Their vision was unclouded and they had not only the visible and tangible evidence of the incoming rays and the rising flame, but they were in constant association with cosmic beings. At the close of initiation into self-mastery, each individual then accomplished complete command over matter so that he was able to raise the vibration of the physical atoms which compose his body and ascend to his home star to await his next assignment. Save for the long drag of time, the initiatory system on this planet remains the same today. At some time, in some embodiment, each individual must make his own ascension. 1. He must be able to achieve mastery over matter, raise the vibrations of his physical body, form a force field or personal spaceship and ascend to his home star. During the present Aquarian age, all death, as we know it today, will cease on this planet. Each individual will be scientifically trained to make his ascension, exactly as it is done on other planets. The high hopes which the Earth people had for the future, did not manifest. The laggards refused to comply with God's law. They insisted on using their own free will to create their own monstrous follies. They declined to assist in unfolding the divine plan. Moreover, they polluted and poisoned the radiant atmosphere with their astral emanations. Scorning all cooperative endeavors spiritually, they grew and matured in physical grossness. They mated and produced offspring of their kind. They poisoned their physical bodies with their own misguided emotions and thoughts of hatred. They introduced disease on the planet. They simply refused to believe in the one God. The frightful contamination became worse. The atmosphere around the Earth became gloomy and dark. The cosmic rays could no longer penetrate to the vegetation and soil. Only the physical sunlight, devoid of the life, giving God essence of the great universal virtues, reached the people. No longer did the Earth give forth its natural note of harmony. Its great vibrant chords were missing from the music of the spheres. No longer did the Earth give off light, for the flame had ceased to rise. This, in brief, is the story of the fall of man. Man became wise in his own foolish self-esteem. Conditions became so hopeless that God decided to destroy the world. The scriptures carry the account of this great deluge, together with the significant statement that the world would again be destroyed, but by fire from heaven rather than water. History of humanity appears to be in its fifth rout race 2, and now is the time when the final cleansing is to take place on the Earth's surface, within the interior of the planet which had also become contaminated, and in the astral atmosphere of the Earth, which now extends 10,000 feet above the surface of the globe. It is in this astral area around the Earth that all of the contamination has accumulated from the emotional emanations given off by individuals through the ages, and where hover the frightful thought forms thrown off by the race. 3. The contaminated astral atmosphere around the Earth, although still being constantly poisoned by emanations of hatred, vengeance, greed and lust generated by living human beings, is being bombarded night and day by powerful rays directed from spaceships orbiting the Earth, by cleansing energies from sources flying close to the Earth. Although disease and death, and all the old fears of poverty, war, hunger, and helplessness still stalk the Earth, these grim specters are attracted hence only by the unlighted ones, by the diehards, the sinister secretives, the stubborn skeptics. In other words, by the laggards who are still lagging. But material situations will be so greatly improved within a few years that the planet will be unrecognizable according to present low standards. The globe, during the past, became so heavily weighted with discord that it drooped on its bent axis like a weary flower on a stalk. Now the supreme power is straightening the axis. Meanwhile, the Earth is moving in a sidewise motion as it edges into a new orbit, and, at the same time, is being lifted up, spiraling into a new spatial region. In the near future, the natural action of the cosmic rays will bring about a complete restoration of the planet. It will again become a paradise as it was before God made man. What we know as the astral atmosphere will be completely dispelled. Light from the cosmic rays will reach the earth in natural abundance. The climate will change so that the spring, like weather, will take charge all year round. With the incoming light, the atmosphere of the earth will again become brilliant with colors. The sphere will sound forth its great chords in the cosmic symphony. Disease will vanish and its memory will be wiped from the minds of men.